We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 5, entitled The Demigods Appeal to the Lord, and the text number 49. This is the famous analogy of the tree, that by pouring water at the root, you nourish the whole tree. Similarly, if you worship Krishna, you satisfy all living entities. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yatahi skanda shakanam tarur mulavashechanam evam aradhanam vishnoh sarvesham atmanas chahi. Yatahi skanda shakanam tarur mulavasechanam evam aradhanam vishnoh sarvesham atmanaschahi. Vaishnavis? Okay, one more. Vaishnavis? Translation word by word. Yata, as. He, indeed. Skandha, of the trunk. Shakanam, and of the branches. Taroho, of a tree. Mula, the root. Avasechanam, watering. Evam, in this way. Aradhanam, worship. Vishnuho, of Lord Vishnu. Sarvesham, of everyone. Atmanaha, of the super soul. Cha, also. He, indeed. Translation. When one pours water on the root of a tree, the trunk and branches of the tree are automatically pleased. Similarly, when one becomes a devotee of Lord Vishnu, everyone is served, for the Lord is the super soul of everyone. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Padma Purana, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnur Aradhanam Param Tasmat Parataram Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. Quote, of all types of worship, worship of Lord Vishnu is best. And better than the worship of Lord Vishnu is the worship of his devotee, the Vaishnava. Unquote. There are many demigods worshipped by people who are attached to material desires. Kamastahi stai rita jnana prapadhyanti nyadivataha. Because people are embarrassed by so many material desires, they worship Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, the goddess Kali, Durga, Ganesha, and Surya to achieve different results. However, one can achieve all these results simultaneously just by worshipping Lord Vishnu. As stated elsewhere in the Bhagavatam 4.31.14, Yata taror mula nishi chanena tripyanti tat skanda bujupashaka pranupahara cha yatindriyanam tathaiva sarvharanam achyuteja. Quote, just by pouring water on the root of a tree, one nourishes its trunk and all of its branches, fruits and flowers. And just by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the limbs of the body. Similarly, by worshipping Lord Vishnu, one can satisfy everyone. Unquote. Krishna consciousness is not a sectarian religious movement. Rather, it is meant for all embracing welfare activities for the world. One can enter this movement without discrimination in terms of caste, creed, religion, or nationality. If one is trained to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, who is the origin of Vishnu Tattva, one can become fully satisfied and perfect in all respects. Magyanati mirandasya giranjana sakaya shakshuram mritam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. Om Vishvapadaya Krishna Prasaya Budhare Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Guru Bhani Pisharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Dharine Vanshakalpa Drupe Shagri Pasindhu Vachavyam Pya Vaishnabhya Namo. Translation again, if you like to repeat. When one pours water on the root of a tree, the trunk and branches of the tree are automatically pleased. Similarly, when one becomes a devotee of Lord Vishnu, everyone is served, for the Lord is the super soul of everyone. Famous analogy, important concept. Important especially for someone who comes from a Vedic, Indian or Hindu background, because definitely in India there are many objects of worship. In Judeo-Christian tradition, God is one, even in Islam. So in the, we could say, Abrahamic religions, there's not much. I mean, one may believe in God or may not believe in God, but generally God is one. But when we come to the Vedic literature, we see that there is a number of type of worships. As some devotee was saying how actually in the Vedas, in the four original Vedas, the word Indra or worship of Indra is more common or more stressed than the worship of Vishnu. And of course there are all sorts of Puranas that say all sorts of things, which actually different deities, different devatas are presented as supreme. So certainly a degree of confusion is expected. We could say even it's a legitimate, because there are different scriptures say different things. So this concept here that but just by focusing on the worship of Vishnu, one does not have to worship anybody else, not at least not the administrative demigods, it's a very central concept. And it's interesting that it's introduced as an analogy, as a famous analogy. Srila Prabhupada quotes also from the previous canto, chapter canto 4, exactly the same analogy is given. And so I thought that we can spend a few minutes understanding the nature of an analogy. And by the way, up to what time we need to go? Or we up to what time we should stop? Okay, so what's an analogy? Here, this is an analogy. As you can see, very often in Sanskrit, the analogy is introduced with the word yatha, the first word of the verse, yatha, as or just like. In fact, if you go to the in the back of the book, back of any book, when there is the index of Sanskrit verses, and you go to yatha, you'll see that there are many. Just in this book, for instance, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, at least verses that start with yatha. And so when you hear yatha, generally you hear that one analogy is coming. And generally it's yatha, tatha. Just like in this is like this, so in this way is the other way. Here he uses the word evam instead of the more common tata, but it's the same. So what is this an analogy, and what's the function of an analogy? Analogy, it's a help to understand something unknown through something known. There is a, technically in English they call, they say there is a source and there is a target. The source is what we are more familiar with. And the target is what we are not familiar with, and the analogy is meant to illustrate, to explain. In this case, we are familiar, we may not be agriculturalists, but we are familiar with the culture that if you water a tree, you water the roots. you may have done yourself, or you may have seen done by others, but you generally understand. You put the water at the root. You do not bother with every single leaf. First of all, it would be very impractical. But second, it's just not necessary. Because once you get to the root, then the structure of the tree is nourished. Now, one important point that devotees should understand is that an analogy is not a proof. It's an illustration. So we need to be very careful that when we argue on some points, analogy is not a demonstration. An analogy really does not demonstrate anything. It illustrates a point. I'll give you a reference. This is a letter from Srila Prabhupada to Satsvarupa Maharaj from October 1975. This is Srila Prabhupada. Concerning our use of analogy, we do not bring in imperfect analogy, but we follow the instructions of the Shastra strictly. Our authority is on the basis of Shastra, not analogy. Let me speak something else. We give analogy for the general mass of people who have no faith in Shastra. Analogy is not proof. Shastra is proof. Foolish people cannot understand or accept, so we use analogy. The conclusion is not drawn from the analogy, but from the Shastra. We don't use a combination of logic and authority. We use authority. Logic we use to convince someone who does not accept the authority. The basic principle is authority. So, this is very important. In fact, in Western logic, there is also what is called the argument from analogy. It's also considered a logical fallacy. When you just base your arguments also only on an analogy. In other words, you're making a point, a philosophical point. And you find something somewhat similar to that point. That is not a demonstration. For instance, Srila Prabhupada gives an example of a false analogy in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'd like to read for you. This is in the introduction of Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Mayavadis are fond of using the example of the water pot, maintaining that when a pot is not filled with water, it makes a sound, but that when it is filled, it makes no sound. Some of you heard this. The pot, if it's filled, it makes no sound, or much less sound. If it's empty, it makes sound. Therefore, Mayavadi sometimes say, at the stage of realization, there's no more speech. There's no more sound being produced. So what Srila Prabhupada says? Srila Prabhupada says, but are we water pots? How can we be compared to them? A good analogy utilizes as many similarities between two objects as possible. A water pot is not an active living force, but we are. Ever silent meditation may be adequate for a water pot, but not for us. Indeed, when a devotee realizes how much he has to say about Krishna, 24 hours in a day are not sufficient. It is the fool who is celebrated as long as he does not speak. When he breaks his silence, his lack of knowledge is exposed. So this is an example of a very bad analogy. Bad analogy because there are no points of similarity. A human being is not a pot. So it's a logical fallacy. But we should be careful. We should be careful. We need to understand. Again, it's an illustration, and it's very useful. Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita gives different analogies. So it's a traditional, legitimate, and very powerful way of conveying information. At the same time, the analogy does not prove the point. It helps you understand, because there are similarity. So because you're familiar with something, with the thing being compared, then you understand, oh, okay, it's the same dynamic like that. Somebody may use this analogy for saying something completely opposite. Somebody may say, just like the tree, its main nourishment comes from the sun through the process of photosynthesis. So just like the tree gets its nourishment from the leaves, we have to worship each and every demigod. It's the same element, but you can use it in whatever way you want. That's called rhetorics. You try to change, expand, add the things, and you can actually try to demonstrate whatever you want through logic. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada say, we don't depend on logic. We use logic, but only as far as it goes. Like we may use a bicycle, we may use a car, but won't be very useful to get to Hawaii. So if you want to go to Hawaii, either you go by ship or you go by flight. Can't go by bicycle, can't go by car, can't go by train. But doesn't mean that we cannot use them. They are useful for certain limited purposes. And this is, in one sense, is indicated also in Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra says, first aphorism says, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now it's time to inquire into the Brahman, into the biggest, into the great, into the absolute truth. And then second sutra says, what is this Brahman? Jammadi Asya Yataha. Brahman is the source of creation, maintenance, destruction. Everything comes from Brahman. And then the next question would be, how do I know about Brahman? How do I get to know? And then the third sutra answers that. Shastra, you need what? You go by Shastra. Logic or different figures of speech or analogy is not enough. At the same time, it's part of our culture and all cultures of the world to use figure of speech. Figure of speech means when the meaning and the usage of a word goes beyond its literal meaning. And they are important. It's part of the, it's important to understand, so it helps cognition. And it also embellishes certain expressions. And there are many figures of speech. Analogy is one. A simile is another one. A metaphor is another one. Maybe not all of us are familiar with the difference between a simile and metaphor. A simile is when we say, for instance, this man is like a lion in the battle. Simile. You see a similarity. You say, he's like a lion in the battle. A metaphor is when you say, this man is a lion in the battle. In other words, you say, he's a lion. He's not like a lion. So, simile, a metaphor, then there is allegory. An allegory is an expanded analogy. This is an analogy because there is an element of the tree and the pouring of water. So it's kind of simple. There is a tree and there is the pouring of water. And of course it's compared to say, the universe, and you have to worship the root, Vishnu. But there are other expanded analogy in which there may be the whole story, and each element of the story has an analogical function, like the story of Maharaj Puranjana. In the story of Puranjana, there are dozens and dozens of elements, and each constitute an analogy. Like Puranjana is the soul, then the city of Puranjana is the body, then he was followed always with the with this snake, which is the prana. Then there were the soldiers, 360 soldiers, there were the day and the nights. And then he had the wife with the mind, intelligence, mind, sometimes intelligence. So you go throughout the whole story, each element has an analogical thing. So that's called an allegory. Talking about the tree, in Chaitanya Charitamrita is given this allegory of the Sankirtan movement as a tree, as a bhakti vriksha. Nowadays we use bhakti vriksha mainly to identify some small groups, congregational groups that meet regularly. But the term bhakti vriksha comes from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhakti vriksha is the whole movement of Lord Chaitanya. It's got roots. Nine roots. The nine roots are the senior associates of Lord Chaitanya, like his guru Ishwara Puri or Paramananda Puri, who was actually Uddhava in Krishna Lila. So is the central root is Paramananda Puri. Then the trunk. The trunk is Lord Chaitanya himself. Then the two main branches is Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu. And then there are hundreds and thousands of branches, and these are all personified branches. They're all devotees, gurus, teachers in different lines. Some start from Nityananda Prabhu, some from Advaita Acharya, some from Gadadhar Pandit. And they spread all over the universe like that. So it's an analogy, it's an allegory. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for instance, used a different allegory in describing the Sankirtan movement. He used the allegory of the marketplace. He says the Sankirtan movement is like a big marketplace, and he gives actually dozens of little analogies. He says in this marketplace there is one product being sold, and that is the holy name. And there are different types of currencies. And the different type of currencies represent the level of faith, the level of advancement. So according to one's faith, attachment, interest, taste, one can get more and more aspects of the holy name. And then in this whole market, there are, he lists more than 20 types of workers in this market. There is the one who is the treasurer, keeps the goods. One who is the broker, he brings customers to the market. There is even a barber, who is the devotee who, when the devotee goes away from devotional service, then he comes back. The barber shaves him up again. In other words, he recuperates the devotees who are a little fallen. And then there is the ferryman, and so many others, so many others. There is the reporter of the market, who gives information about the market, like that. So there are all these figures of speech, and I guess we should learn to use them and know what is their specific weight. Some, again, it's an embellishment to make the speech more attractive, more poetic. It is said one of the 26 qualities of a devotee is to be poetic. So using these similes, metaphors, and there are many other forms of speech, makes the it creates what you call images in the mind. So it's easy for people to relate to those images. Sometimes it is said that there are three types of people. There are people who think in words, there are people who think in images, and there are people who think in feelings. So didactically speaking, educationally speaking, you have different students, you need to address all the learning styles, because if you address only one learning style, you don't really hit the target. Some people understand words, but they don't really capture them very well. You need to translate those words into images so that they have a realization. Oh, this is the point. Like that. Anyway, these are a few considerations about this verse and the use of analogy. Any question or comments? Yes. You waited for me to ask. Good question. No, you satisfy your duty to those living entities. They may not be satisfied. Like when Indra, when they, you know the story of Govardhan Puja, that when the Vrajvasis were ready to worship Indra. You know the story. Govardhan Puja, Govardhan, that they were preparing to worship Indra. And then Krishna started preaching to them. He said, why you worship Indra? There's no need of worshiping Indra. Let's worship Govardhan. Actually, Govardhan gives us everything. Fresh grasses, beautiful water, a place to play, place for the cows, and gems, precious stones. So then finally they got convinced. Okay, let's worship Govardhan. And they did this whole big worship, but then Indra was not happy at all. And in fact, he poured water, not on the root of the tree, but he poured water. He just wanted to wash away the whole Vrindavan. He wanted basically to kill everybody, apparently, to just inundate the whole Vrindavan. So you may say, well, if worshipping Govardhan, worshipping Krishna, in fact, Srila Prabhupada says, even higher than worshipping Krishna is worshipping the devotee of Krishna. So if you worship Govardhan, or if you worship Krishna, why Indra wasn't happy? Yeah, sometimes people are not happy. Maybe your parents are not happy. I don't know your parents, but maybe they had other plans for you than sitting here in orange clothes with shaved head listening to some Sanskrit book. Probably they didn't plan that. I don't know who are your parents, but probably they were not planning that for you. So the fact, then they may not be automatically pleased, satisfied, but you satisfy, if you do it properly, you satisfy your duties towards those different categories of being. Okay? So you legitimize your status, you legitimize your operations. At the same time, we also have to understand that in that worship of Krishna, sometimes you need to take in consideration other, we could say, mundane or worldly duties, like, say, paying taxes. You can't say, I have an income, and according to the laws of the country, I have to pay a certain percentage, but I will not pay any taxes because, you know, I'm pouring water at the root of the tree. That may not be accepted. And may give actually a very bad reputation to the movement. So similarly, it doesn't mean you have to neglect your parents. You may not be able, because you are a brahmachari, so you may not be able to satisfy their dreams and ambitions. But doesn't mean that you need to neglect them unnecessarily. Like when the mother of Brahmananda and Garga Muni came to see them in New York. Srila Prabhupada asked the sons, pay obeisances to your mother. And they paid dandavas to the mother. You follow? So you need to understand In other words, should not be used to neglect normal duties. There's a mic for you.
Nice analytical way to explain. I was just saying that sometimes when we try to convey our message to the public outside, and for the followers of some other religious groups who might not be necessarily philosophically inclined, they use the point in which they try to prove a point by saying, I was very bad, or I did this, or in fact, many things have been running now because of my process, whatever process they're following in a religious group. This proved to be truth. Would that follow in the category of sentimentalism? Or in which category would you put that?
So they say for instance, I was very sinful, I was drinking, yes, this, that, drinking, but yeah. Because I found Jesus,
yeah.
Now I'm not drinking anymore. Well, that's true. That's true. What category I'll put it in terms of logic? Well, it's not a logical statement. It can be just the truth. It's the truth. I mean, it's our philosophy, not that by association with the saintly people, one becomes free from bad habits. We could say it's just a description of the sequence of events. We could say the same. Some of us may have been into drugs, some of us may have been into alcohol, some of us may be into other things. And because we came to the moment of Lord Chaitanya, we got rid of these bad habits. So similarly, there are other religious groups, spiritual groups, and the same principle applies. People come from different sinful backgrounds, and they come and they get purified because they come in touch with the scriptures. They come in touch directly and indirectly with saintly people, like Jesus, and they become purified. They get some higher taste. They get some mercy. But Archita Prabhu is very eager to comment, apparently.
Hare Krishna Kante Prabhu, thank you very much for giving this class at short notice. Beautiful class, wonderful. Touching on such an annoying question, this would fall in Pratyaksha. There are different ways of experiencing or proving things. So Pratyaksha is the first one, direct experience. So by their direct experience, they were bad. They came to Jesus, now they're good. But the way Prabhupada would override that is to say, well, what is the actual goal of your process? It's not just to turn alcoholics into non-alcoholics. The goal of any real religion is to know God, to understand God, to love God. So by following this path, how much do you know about God? How much do you love God? Where is that proof? That's what Prabhupada would ask that.
That's what's your question?
That's what Srila Prabhupada would ask that person, such a person. That, yes, no, you've become good, you've given up your bad habits, at least the ones that you recognize as bad, like drinking. There are others that we would say you can also give up, like eating meat. But at least, okay, so you're impressed by the fact that you gave up alcohol because now you've turned to Jesus. But what is the actual goal of Jesus' path? The actual goal, he himself said, is to know the Lord, thy God, and love him with all your heart, etc.
So how far has this taken? You are suggesting that besides acknowledging their advancement, yes, we should point them to a higher goal.
Exactly, because any path has people who give up bad habits but also slip back into bad habits or stay on the fence. We, in our community, the same thing. People come, they chant Hare Krishna, they give up their bad habits for some time, but then they fall back. So just to say that right now at this point I've given up bad habits, that doesn't prove that your path is perfect. What is the goal of the path, and have you attained that goal? That's how we would take it to the next level.
Anything else? One, two? Or two, one? Yes?
Two, one. Hare Krishna. Just because at the beginning of the class you said that analogies are not proof, they're just used to support something. And that analogy there that you gave of a Christian person or any person who says, you know, because of this I gave up that, it depends how they use it. If they say, therefore, this is the only way to give up this thing, then it becomes a fallacy called proof by selected instances, that you have, you know, one or two things and you generalize it to the whole universe and say, that's the only way, that's the only way, that's the only way. And so it's not actually the statement itself that's a logical fallacy, but the use of the statement can be a logical fallacy. So you have to see what they're trying to get at and then break down that fallacy when you find it.
Thank you.
Can we use such metaphors as cows, asses, camels, like Prabhupada used in our, you know, lecture, not speech?
Huh?
What about such metaphors as asses, camels, cows?
What about them? If we can use,
can
those
we use
expressions?
The same? Yeah, can we use the same like relating to people? Because someone might say that, but we are not. They are not camels. They are not asses. They are.
Uh huh. You know, yeah, that's.
There is no logic. I mean, someone might say. I don't know.
Those are similes. See, again, what's analogical language is? You are comparing different things. Humans are not camels. Huh? But some humans have something in common with camels. You know what? You studied that analogy? So what's what the camel does? Huh?
Well, he's chewing the the prickly things and
the what?
He's chewing the prickly things, some prickly.
Yeah,
and
the thorns. Yeah. And so then he enjoys the blood.
Right.
Okay. So certain, that's a comparison, that some humans are so attached to sex life and they're actually enjoying their own blood, wasting their own blood. So that's a,
right,
that's a similarity. Okay? So you need to explain, and like just like the scriptures, the acharyas explain. Now, if your question is, I'm not sure. What is your question? Is your question is, can we use such a strong statements? This is that your question?
Yes, kind of. And I'm also like before you mentioned the analogy or whatever it was about the pots, like Prabhupada said, but humans are not pots. We are not pots.
Yes.
Like, you know, that with the feeling of the pot or the empty pot.
Uh-huh.
So.
Oh, so you're saying just like a human is not a pot, so to compare the human to a pot is not a good analogy.
Yeah.
You're saying maybe comparing a human to a camel.
I'm trying to find out whether it's fair to use
Fair.
Whether it's fair to use the words like camels, asses, and.
Camels, asses,
like
dogs, and pigs, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, certainly, see, I tell you why it's a fair analogy. There's a principle and there's an application. The analogy is fair, first of all, because it comes from the Bhagavatam. Savit karaustra karahi. This is the Bhagavatam. I think it's Shukadeva Goswami who speaks that. Swavid karahostra karahi. So the analogy is perfect. If you are not sure what does it mean, obviously you need to, and you need to inquire. You need to know what you are presenting. Then, so the analogy is fine. The simile is fine. There are people who are like camels, asses, dogs, and pigs. Okay. There are people who have similar characteristics. Okay. Now, the usage, how to use it, then you have to see the context, you have to see your interlocutor, the person you're talking with, you have to see your motivation. In other words, if you're only trying to insult people, you're a camel, you're an ass, and you're a dog, that's not the right motivation. One thing you can use, and of course, a little bit distance yourself, instead of saying, you are a camel, you can say, the scriptures say that people who are too much attached and addicted to sex enjoyment, they are like camels. So you're not saying, you're saying the scriptures are saying. Yes. Yes. Yeah, in fact, some people like to be like camels. Like you have this huge advertisement for the camel cigarettes, and you see these camels with shades. They really look cool, you know. So it goes, you're like a camel. Thank you very much. Wow. So you have to understand the cultural context, you know. Yeah, dog. Well, yeah, why not? Okay, so it's a long discussion, but you need to understand, first of all, you need to understand the analogy. For a second, you have to see what's your goal. What's your goal?
Some ethical aspect also.
What?
Ethical aspect.
Ethical.
Right.
If you don't feel comfortable, don't say it. Or if you're giving a lecture on that verse, you can say, the scriptures say like this, let's make a little a personal exam, what element of this refers to us, and if the shoe fits, wear it, which is another analogy. If the shoe fits, wear it. I'm just saying, there are people like this, then you see if you have these characteristics or not. It's... That's another aspect. You include yourself. Sometimes we act like asses. Sometimes we act like camels. So that kind of mitigates the weight because you are including yourself. Thank you. Thank you for bringing it up. Thank you all for your attention. Grantarashimabhadam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Back to green, right? And then you go like this.